This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
The Curse, Episode 9, Young Hearts, is over. Patreon post-show recap here, just getting started. My name is Bryce, and of course, I'm not alone. I'm here with Dr. Amanda. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I would just like to say that even though you called me a tool right before the podcast started recording, I take that as a compliment, because tools fix things.
Pretty good comeback. Didn't even need to go to, I guess he did need to go to a comedy cast class. We don't know whether that came from the comedy class or not.
No, yeah.
I was going to give you 10 seconds to say you like being my podcast co-host. Oh. 10.
I like being your podcast co-host. Okay. I would be so, whatever they were doing, I would not, like, if there's a moment of silence, I will say something nice to somebody to use the tension.
Yeah, do you ever use the counting down on your
channel? I have not.
Use it? Yeah, I don't.
It's a very, like, passive-aggressive move.
Yeah, it's pretty passive-aggressive, yeah. I mean, then you have to – then the problem for me is you then have to have – you have to follow through if you get to zero.
It turns out that you just start counting again.
You count again. That's right. Wow, this show is so educational. All right, The Curse, Episode 9, the penultimate episode.
Wow, we are there. I can't believe it. The penultimate episode, only one episode left. You know, interestingly enough, I feel like some of the chatter in the Discord now and that I've seen online is people saying, now I finally think I know what this show is about and I don't know if I like it.
Yeah, I still feel like there's a lot of like, wait, what? Why? Wait, who? What? They're just like people. They're like coming together, which is something we've talked about, trying to theorize about how everything ties together. This is one of those episodes. I was saying this about a show I watched, or an episode of Fargo I was podcasting about earlier today, in which I said, like, yeah, I don't hate it. Like, I actually love it, but I also hated it. You know, it's like, I really didn't really, for the first time, I think, the cringe stuff really doesn't make me cringe. Like, I'll sit and be like, oh, yeah, that's obviously, like, very cringy. But I'm not, like, as uncomfortable as I think a lot of people who've been watching The Curse have felt. Like, I think I want to turn this show off. I've never wanted to do that. Basically until the last scene.
This was an extremely hard episode to watch, especially the final scene is very hard to watch. I mean, obviously a very intentional choice. I had like the thought while I was watching it, I was like, you know, I don't know if this is cringe comedy as much as it's just cringe. Like there were moments where I think we talked about it, Grace, like things like the breathalyzer scene, both of them, where I'm like, this is awful and this is extremely cringe and very, very dark, but it's also just a very funny idea. Like, it's a very darkly funny concept at the heart of it. And there's something about being in a loveless marriage and feeling trapped that I'm like, there's no punchline there.
Yeah, there's no one to laugh at, really. In the Dougie stuff, you're laughing at Dougie, and that feels justified. And in this, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm supposed to, like, who to laugh at and who deserves to be laughed at. Yeah, it's really not there. So I just have to hold on to all of, like, the cringy.
Yeah, there's very little of that kind of catharsis of aha, and, you know, and it breaks and it's funny. And I think you and I have been enjoying this show very much, maybe more than most. Like, I think that the social commentary and the relationships and the meditations on class and development and, you know, all of these issues, like, I do think that that's very smart and very fresh. And it's like venturing into a conversation that we should be having more of. And sometimes it's funny. But sometimes the show is tough to watch. And I still think it's great and very well done. But I'm very curious. Like, I think I would very much welcome a few more like laughing moments in the finale.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the episode is pretty fascinating, even if it's not as maybe funny or, you know, you said cathartic, you know, but I think it's exceptionally well acted.
Yes.
And then I think the commentary, the thing we've been talking about, the thing that's so interesting, I think, about that final scene, and to like jump all the way to the end of the episode, but it's so uncomfortable. And you do, there is this moment where like he gets up and he leaves and you're like, yeah. And then he comes back and he is only more of, he's only doing more of the thing that she has just said on camera that she doesn't like, but it's his, the only way he knows how to behave. Mm-hmm. So I think the interesting commentary to me about this show is that these, you know, we talked about what's the outcome of the show. Like, what is a softy, you know, story, which interestingly enough, last week we were like, yeah, softy brothers. Like, what do they do? Lo and behold, today, maybe not the softy brothers anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe just one, maybe individual softy brother. As in some interviews, Benny seems to want to go out on his own a little bit more or work with some other people. And we said that it's seemingly from what we've seen so far, the most likely outcome is a little bit of like everything is ruined, but they're probably mostly fine, even if they're not together. And I still think that that's more true. But I think the interesting thing from this episode is that Asher's response to the conflict is to only become more of what, which is kind of like what Whitney was doing, like, you know, over the course of the last few episodes, of like only becoming more entrenched in who she thinks she should be to try and convince people she's not the person they think she is.
Yeah. And I think interestingly, like I probably started off watching this series thinking that like the Nathan Fielder character was going to be like the monster, and that his like relationship with Whitney was going to be like an extension of that, like they're monsters together, or he's like the monster and they're doing this on all the wrong way. And I think that maybe Whitney is the main character of this show and she's the monster, and the curse is really Whitney's curse. Like, she's the person who's, you know, doing all of this, like causing all of this bad stuff to happen in Española and in her life. And like Asher is her punishment.
Yeah, he literally says he is the curse this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Although I was thinking, and we'll get to that last scene, but whether or not I had this read of like this performance and being Nathan is the one who writes this show. And I would agree that I think you cast Emma Stone and you immediately are like, okay, main character of the show. She's clearly the best performer on the show. She's so good in this role. Not that her role like wouldn't have been as interesting as it is, but it is. But also, Nathan Fielder's projects have historically been so much about him to a degree. Mm-hmm. He is such a part of the shows that he has made in both Nathan For You and The Rehearsal, that as we're coming to the end and I watch this last scene, I am wondering how much is he trying to just tell us something about how he has at least been feeling. If not, he's trying to tell us who he is. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of discourse in movies this past year about, I have a great segue here that I just thought of, which is directors who make movies that seem to be about how they make movies. Christopher Nolan is probably the best example of this, which interestingly, Benny Safdie was in Oppenheimer. But there is something about Christopher Nolan, potentially about Christopher Nolan and his sort of methodic nature in creating a thing. And then whether you put that thing out and it's good or not, like it also could just be about the guy who built the bomb. But Michael Mann just came out with a movie called Ferrari, which some people are saying like, oh, it's about his like meticulous nature about who he is, like in control of the movie.
I even think that Barbie was in a way like, you know, oh, like how does a piece of art get interpreted once it's out there? And it was Greta Gerwig sort of talking to the audience.
So it's then hard for me to think like Nathan Fielder doesn't make things that he doesn't think in some way, you know, and he co-created this project with Benny Safdie. But how much in this episode, this, because to me, I think in that last scene, it's the most I feel like I'm watching. I had a tough time earlier in the show where I was like, Nathan, I mean, Asher, like I had a tough time with that.
Yeah.
But then I felt like in this scene, like there's some like Nathan being Nathan slipping through. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. We'll continue to talk about it as we recap the episode. But like, I think you brought up right before we hopped on to record that, like, what is Nathan saying potentially about what he's done as a producer of the rehearsal, and Nathan, for you, and how he's used subject, like, what is he saying about television producers in the show he's making about television producers?
Right.
Like, obviously something. It's obviously a reflection on his own work. So finding, like, what he thinks about, you know, Asher and Whitney and Dougie, who are extremely unflatteringly portrayed, I would think, is a really interesting question.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into the episode then. Wit walks out of the house and sort of walking on the street, and this car passes her, and it gets so ominous. It passes her, doesn't follow her.
Yeah.
It leaves when she's leaving, passes her, but the music is so ominous, and then it pulls into the plaza. What'd you make of this opening?
Yeah, it looks like it's following her at first, but then it's not, but it is going to the mini mall with the Yoshika jeans. Yoshika jeans.
Wouldn't be the guy who gets fired later, right? It wouldn't be. No, doesn't it? Because she's supposed to drive. There's a note left in her car.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, we can talk about that. I don't think it's that. I was wondering, is this Asher who's leaving separately? But is it coming from another place? Like, it's not clear. Is it
Doug? Yeah, waiting for her to leave. And then he's like, okay, I'll go. But he drives past her and doesn't give her. They don't ride together. Could be. So he's very upset at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. But so ominous. The music is so horror vibe, the music.
Yeah.
The car is just driving for such an extended shot. It's just such an interesting opening. All right. So we see the couple that has been cast as the, you know, they're going to have a baby, and they're trying on jeans, and they're a little, the button's not done up, and she's helping, and he's making jokes about, oh, I was eating for two, but, or, you know, she was eating for two, he's eating for three. And then Martha, the HGTV exec, is there, and she's like, that was so funny and great, but what if it was actually Asher and Whitney who did that?
It's so funny because it's like almost the exact same thought that Whitney had, was like, what if the HGTV producers could see you helping me take my sweater off? It's like almost the exact same thing, but it's almost funnier because it's like, this is already a staged interaction between Pascal and Janice, who aren't even buying the house.
Right.
And she's like, oh, what if we had Whitney and Asher do it? Which they will recreate it later.
Yeah. I like that. It's already so put on. And she's like, what if we made it more put on? It's very good. All right. Whitney shows up, she's immediately going to Dougie and is like, today we should make Asher look like a real tough guy. Like, that will be funny. He'll be humiliated. Mm-hmm. And Dougie then reveals that Martha's there from HGTV. They want to get dinner. They're loving the show. But the stuff where there's conflict between her and Asher is not what the network wants. And we basically begin, you know, the course of the episode, which is basically Whitney coming to terms with the fact that, like, they don't want the conflict of
right.
her struggling with her relationship with Asher.
Yeah. And Whitney, like, pushes back and she's like, you know, but you said that, like, you know, this was good. And like, and he's like, yeah. He's like, well, I was wrong. They don't want us to do that at all. She's like, well, you said whatever, like, because now Whitney's starting to think, what if we really break up?
Right.
And then, like, she still wants to be the green queen if they break up. But the network doesn't want that. They don't, like, Dougie sort of explains, like, oh, well, if we watch a show and the couple gets divorced, it's like usually after we know the couple for a really long
time. There's drama in that rather than two people just hate each other. She's like, we don't hate. We're never married. Yeah. They want to put a positive spin on the negative. The some of the stuff can be in there, but it has to ultimately, at the end of the day, they have to be a happy couple. Mm-hmm. It's pretty rough news for Whitney, who's like,
Whitney's gone all in on this, like, her marriage is falling apart thing.
Yeah. So Asher's going to go grab a coffee. There's a little bit of a note here about whether Fernando is in today. But basically the point of this, Asher's not in a very, after being called a little baby, he's not in a very good mood. mood. And then we get the situation with where Patrick, one of the people who worked on the show, will not be in the show anymore.
Is this the guy, Grace? Do we think that this is the guy from that earlier episode that she was like, "You're fired"? Just kidding. I'm such a cool boss.
Yeah, that was my first like instinct. Was like, I feel like you've been better at this than me, where it's like, oh, so many people are named in the show, and often like they get named and then they get, you know, put in a scene later. So yeah, I would bet that we've seen this person.
Yeah,
he's the first person I can think. The only other is the guy who is listening in, you know, the guy who they're like, "Hey, are you is it on?" I can't remember what his name is, but he's another one I could see, but I think someone. And yes, we put Slumlord, and like the genes, he's like, no, he can express himself. It actually has nothing to do with me. I'm not part of that at all. So the note clearly is not about me. And they try to call, but then we learn that he's upset because Phoebe's uncle got evicted from the unit that Whitney's parents own. And so he hangs up the phone pretty angrily.
Yeah. Yeah. Bookends is the name of this unit. And Whitney's here. She's trying to smooth everything over. She wants to talk to him. Tanya is the production assistant, and she's like, we just don't recommend that from a like a labor practices standpoint. And Patrick doesn't want to talk to her. Like, he has Tanya on the phone the second like he hears that Whitney's there. He just hangs up. These people do not want to talk to Whitney, but she wants to clear the air here with him. And it turns out that this Phoebe is somebody else that Whitney knows. She's one of the drivers for the production.
Yeah, this scene is pretty fascinating to me. So we learn that the uncle is evicted from the home. Whitney says, "I don't have anything to do, but I could maybe use my relationship to get him back in his apartment." Ask for his information.
He's like, "I have no connections to Bookends, but maybe I could use my relationship connection."
So good. And Phoebe says, "Do you remember what you told me on my first day of work?" And I was like, "Uh-oh, this is really bad." But then it's like secretly sweet, where she's like, "There aren't a there aren't a lot of women drivers out there, so go get them, girl." She's like, "That meant a lot to me, and I can't wait for the show to out, because everyone's gonna see who Whitney really is." And then Whitney immediately Googles her own name, and when Whitney Siegel doesn't come up, there are lots of articles for Whitney Rhodes.
It's like, you know, Slumlord, Santa Fe, Tenet's claim, it's Hell on Earth, Living at Bookends, all of this stuff. I was wondering, in Whitney's conversation with Phoebe, like, Phoebe does seem to be like kind of genuinely she seems a bit like a very sweet person who's genuinely sort of appreciative of Whitney's, like, the comments that Whitney made. When she says, "I can't wait for the show to come out and everyone will get to see who you really are," like, I was trying to figure out how to hear that line. Because on the one hand, you can say, "Oh, once the show comes out, everybody will see how warm and caring and generous Whitney is." But the other way to read it is like, once the show comes out, everyone will see like what a monster you really are. And like, Phoebe clearly was aware of Whitney's connections to Bookends, or else she couldn't have told Patrick about it. Like, do you think that there's more than one way to read that line from Phoebe?
Maybe. I think I read it incredibly genuinely in that, like, I don't think Phoebe has, you know, maybe she doesn't even know the full extent of, like, because we'll learn later why her uncle has been evicted. I think that for as much as that Whitney puts on this facade, it is a facade that actually, I think, does fool people. She's fooled the HGTV into they clearly think highly of her. Like, there are ways in which it does work on people. And it's only like the more you get to know somebody that it often, you know, then you see the cracks. But I don't think Phoebe knows enough and maybe doesn't. Like, I feel bad saying, but maybe doesn't realize, like, yeah, that there's, like, for some people, it is like, oh, it's, I still to this day will have people, like, I'll talk about the area that I live in, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, so nice, so gentrified down there." I'm like, wait, hold on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I think that, honestly, I read this as really genuine. I think it's, I think the line of, like, everyone's going to see who you really are, I think that's genuine, but it's then very funny to then immediately go into Whitney's Googling herself, and nothing comes up about her with her name Whitney Siegel. But then when you when you actually search her, like when you search her with her maiden name, all of the stuff comes up.
Right.
So I think that that to me, it's just like a very clever, I think for me, like
yeah.
editing device. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that there's probably something to like Whitney hearing that, like everybody will see who I really am. And even though Whitney is a little bit self-deluded, I think that she also like probably has insecurities about like whether, like how people would judge her if they saw who she really was. So I think that maybe it's like an effective line in that way as well.
She's also just been told by Dougie that all the stuff about the authentic stuff that she's saying that she's believing now has to be cut out of the show. So is the show actually going to show an authentic version of Whitney, or will it just be the version that is the most sort of palatable?
Yeah. And like, not for nothing, like the part, I mean, we'll we can talk about this when we get to them watching it at the end, but like the stuff that Dougie cuts where Whitney is like just being mean about Asher, it's like she looks at least as bad as Asher does. Oh, like she looks like a monster.
100%. All right. So this is where they're going to sit down. Turns out Asher and Whitney, Fernando has quit. Whitney says, well, we did everything we could do. And I guess he wasn't such a tough guy after all, is what she says, which that feels really bad. With one episode left and no Fernando in this episode, don't like that. She suggests that they do something fun before dinner, trying to like sort of mend their relationship. This is
so this is like totally disingenuous, because now she's like, oh, I guess we can't just like get divorced before the show comes out like I had originally planned.
Especially because I do think this is pretty genuinely, and I know it's like disingenuous from Whitney, but it is, there is like a chemistry between them and like with the music and everything, it's like pretty sweet. And how, again, it's just how much Asher loves Whitney. And in the scenes, you don't really see Whitney like rolling her eyes. Like, I think she's genuinely trying in these scenes, but it's pretty heartbreaking knowing the end of the episode what will happen. But this is where we get the countdown. They're going to go bowling. Say you love me. She never says. She doesn't.
Yeah, she says, like, when he counts down, you love me, right? And then she says, yes, I'll go bowling.
It's so indeed. I think that the Nathan Fielder acting here, when she starts counting and he cracks the first time, he's so charming. Like, you can kind of see where, like, it does feel like a lot of his robotic, like, persona, especially from and I actually rewatching the beginning of Nathan for You, you can feel that he sort of finds that character as he's going. It's funnier to be more straight faced than he like pushes back on some things at the beginning in a way. And so, yeah, I feel like you can sort of see, I'm completely falling for it, but when they're like giggling together at the countdown stuff, I'm like, oh, so sweet, even though she's.
Yeah. I mean, they need something to be like a little bit believable as a couple, like at all. So I think it walks the line of like, we believe that she's really unhappy, but also that there's something between them that like at least justified them getting together.
Yeah, that's what I think works for me, and that you have to believe that at some point there's something about them that works to be together, rather than it's like completely like she found him and just brought him along the whole time. I love the bowling scene. I like that he has a bowling glove and he's really good at bowling.
He was really good at bowling.
Yeah. Although I think later he scored like a 150 or something?
A 195, which I have no idea how good.
Out of 300, I think. So I think that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that he had his buttons buttoned all the way up too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the glove got me real good. Yeah. So then they see, this is Bill, the casino worker, right? It's Bill.
Yes, it's Bill.
Yeah. And Whitney wants to just like kind of leave the situation, but Asher's, no, like I'm coming with you. And then Bill apologizes, and it turns out they don't think it was Asher who leaked the footage. It must have been Carl. And then Asher says, actually no, like it's not called backstabbing when you're standing up for what's right. I leaked the footage, and this is where it gets called a tool. Since I am a tool, tools fix things. They give each other the finger. Asher keeps wanting to go back to like fight, but then leaves.
I'm the whistleblower. It was me. You should be ashamed of yourself for going along with that. When Asher was like very clearly going along with it, but Asher is being an effing tool. He had his out, but he uses this moment to really kind of like stand up as like the white knight and show Whitney that he's going to take the heat for this because he's proud that he was the whistleblower.
I think it's interesting about the scene is how much Asher is then like loving on Whitney, like the whole time he's also like arm around, kissing her forehead, kissing, and it's almost like these two things have to be Mm-hmm. Like length, like me doing the thing you've just been insulting me for, which is like, don't do the right thing on my own. I'm now mm-hmm. doing it. And also ipso facto, you should then love me. Should be like,
it's so together. Painful to watch because yeah. like he's trying to win her back and he like thinks he's doing all of the right things. And he even probably thinks that it's working. And that's why they went bowling, not knowing that right. there's this whole other agenda that HGTV needs to like see them being like a loving couple. Like they also like, you know, have recreated the Jean scene and like a cafe scene where they're putting icing on each other's noses. So there's something that's so sad about Asher, like thinking he's winning his wife back and like getting her love when she's really just continuing to slip away from him.
Yeah. All right. So they go for dinner. And Martha's talking about, this is great. It's a holistic approach to climate change, showing viewers that environment can be designed too. And these former hosts, they would always make the homes uglier and people just felt guilty.
The Solar Sisters.
Yeah. She's like, oh, this is great. Holistic is my whole philosophy. Design extends beyond the home. And then, so I was like, yeah, the footage really doesn't even capture how bleak this community, like how like awful and terrible this community, and like it's ugly and dirty and terrible. And she's like, well, we could do more of that. And then the name comes up. It's, you know, Whitney actually thought maybe it should be called the Green Queen. She's like, yeah, and you have, you know, every queen needs her jester.
Yeah. 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 And an eye roll from Whitney, right?
Well, she pretends to juggle. I was pretending to juggle as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, she's pointing out that like she's got the whole shtick nailed for the new mm-hmm. edit of like Whitney being like not, she doesn't hate him. She's just kind of like sometimes annoyed by him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Martha's also like adding in that like, you know, maybe that they'll have kids one day and makes those more relatable.
Oof. Yeah.
But like Whitney's really starting to be like disillusioned with the direction that this is going. Like Martha also mentions, you know, but you know, if you really want your message to be heard, you have to stay focused on one thing. And then Whitney says, but like holistic means focusing on something right. from all sides. And Martha's like, well, maybe I misused that term.
Yeah, this is pretty good. I like, you know, the scene of like basically trying to play the part. And even the part that isn't Whitney divorcing Asher is not good for Asher. It's so sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Building on what's to come. Yeah. What do you make of this? They go back home. Whitney seems incredibly stressed. She sits down and then she hears Asher whispering in the background. And it sounds like he's like talking dirty. So
yeah, it's really, and I watched this with with the closed caption, so I could actually make out what he says. I'm guessing that Asher is like masturbating in the bathroom and he's like talking tough. He's saying like, he's like recreating his confrontation with Bill and he's saying like, you know, you're ugly AF. I'd like to see you try to get a wife as hot as Whitney. She only wants to be with people like me. See how hot my wife is. She's so hot. You're so ugly. You want to F my wife. I want to watch you F my wife, Bill. Like he's saying all of this.
Okay.
He's saying all of this stuff and Whitney is overhearing him and she's like incredibly disgusted.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. What a scene. Yeah. I'm just surprised for how much micro penis we've seen in the show. Yeah. I mean, I guess they're not going to show that, but you know. It's a very, like, I was like
oh, I got it because a banana doesn't stretch.
Yeah, very subdued. This, we were like, what are they saying? Like, what? Like, what?
Yeah, I wonder, like, how without the closed caption, how much of that you could get because it was very faint. But
I think in an episode where you, by the end of it, I think until Asher comes back in the room, this whole episode, you should feel bad for Asher, which I think they want to build empathy.
Yeah.
So I do think it's like the scene has to be like subtle enough to not just be like, you don't want to, like, you don't fully want to be like, oh, what total creep, you know? So I feel like the scene is so much more about like Whitney and her, how she's feeling and how she's basically like, yeah, for this full, like half a day had to put on this act to like try and fix it. You don't really, because then I feel like the last scene is supposed to be like, you felt bad for Asher and then he comes back. You're like, oh, wait, no, hold on. Wait, stop. So I feel like potentially just designed to not make us feel weird about Asher. But you still
but it's do, still but there. Not as much. It's still there. I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's very clearly like it's this is I mean, this is such hell. Like, it's very clear that Whitney is like completely miserable and she shouldn't be with somebody that she doesn't want to be with, like, regardless of how, you know, bad we feel for Asher here for at least trying. But it's very dark.
Yeah. All right. So Whitney drives to Bookend Apartments and she knows some people there. She does go to look for Paul. Is it Paul McIntosh is the name of Phoebe's uncle? Is that
no, right?
Or
think,
is her father Paul?
I think her father's name is Paul. Gordon McIntosh is the name of the tenant.
Because she goes and knocks on a door and she's looking for Paul. And the
so
guy's
she's
like,
looking for her dad. And I think it's her parents are like are living or somewhat occupying one of these units because his lawyer advised him to. It sounds like they're probably in some like legal trouble, like about some legal dispute about something. But
yeah, I wonder if the thing here, it's not super clear, but the thought for me is like, why would the lawyer be like, go live there? Which is basically like, well, we live there. Like if anything comes back to be like, it's awful. There's cockroaches. Right.
I think it's like a shout. Like, I think it's like they probably have like their own primary residence, but they're like using this as some sort of cover.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems shady. And we find out that Gordon McIntosh, like the Apple, was kicked out because he gutted the whole unit. And then when they were told they had to replace all the appliances and everything, he did it again. So they've now kicked him out. And so, you know, Whitney's basically saying, like, you can't kick him out. You can't do that. And her dad is saying, well, if we bring him back in, he's going to do the same thing again. So of course we have to. There's this debate about this place is a last resort. Mm-hmm. Her mother brings up like people are coming to us because you have actually like moved them, displaced them from their homes. This is such a fascinating conversation between the parents and their kid.
Yeah, it's very, very fascinating. Like clearly, like they're supposed to represent like, you know, Whitney's trying to be a different type of landowner, landlord, developer than her parents are. Her parents actually develop low income housing, but also they're probably like, you know, as they've been called, slumlords are not excellent stewards of that. We don't know what their practices are, but there's this situation that they were in where like they were being taken advantage of by this other tenant. So I don't know the best way to handle that. But at some point, Paul says, like, you know, or maybe it's the mother. She says, like, you know, if you have such a problem with what we do and you want to decide who gets evicted and who doesn't, then you're more than welcome to come work for us and run the buildings the way that you want to. There's also like an argument here where like Whitney's saying, like, I'm nothing like you. You told Asher that if they find any native artifacts, they should destroy them. And, you know, they say like, well, if you want to avoid 4 years of litigation, it's not a bad idea and it's perfectly legal. So there's like this tensions in the way that they try to manage their properties where Whitney sees herself as being extremely ethical and her parents not being ethical. But like Paul like brings up that, you know, when it's not when it's not your money, then of course you can afford to do all of this stuff.
It says it's a loan. They'll pay it all back. They also comment, I believe the insinuation here is about her playing dress up, which is about her necklace, which is like
it's a Star of David. So they're like so her mom says something pretty mean and anti-Semitic of like sort of insulting Whitney's faith or and accusing it of being like some kind of act that she's converted to Judaism. As she leaves, you know, and Whitney says, maybe this is what happens when you raise your kid to believe in nothing.
Yeah. The artifact stuff too is, you know, I think playing very well on, and we'll see in this episode of, the issues that are happening within the Pueblo community where people are concerned. We saw that couple earlier who they're like, oh, we have to sign this agreement that like, if there was ever, you know, an issue, we would give up our rights to the land. Right. And so obviously like that's seemingly what this is about, that if you find an artifact, it would provide proof that the land likely belonged to the Pueblo. So that's what, like he's trying to, Paul is trying to tell Asher, like, basically, if you find one, destroy it, because otherwise you're going to, like, the land you bought will get taken away from you.
Right.
So it's just the whole, the way, I mean, you know, Whitney wants to be ethical. The easiest way to be more ethical is to not be a landlord.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, that's a great start. It's a great start.
Yeah. Not, yeah. Owning all this property. But I just think it's like a, it's pretty interesting conversation.
Yeah.
That happens between them, the fight that happens. And we get so much more insight into, her parents, even though we've seen them a couple times. They bring up the fact that they're like always ushered away when there's cameras and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love Corbin Burnson. I think he's really great.
Whitney's going to go get a massage. She's pretty stressed out. And then it turns out that Kara is her massage therapist.
Gosh.
And she's like, you know, Kara's like, you know, if this is uncomfortable, like we can get someone else. And Whitney's like, no, fine. Like, unless you're uncomfortable. And Kara does not.
Kara's like, nah, I don't care. She's like, I don't care.
That's fine. And then Whitney's like, okay, actually, maybe not. And then tips $300. Does she tip $350?
Yes. For a massage she didn't get.
Yeah, that's on top of the massage
that she didn't get. She pays for, yeah, because yeah, I mean, it's again, like, this is another scene that highlights, like, the difference in power and financial and social position between Whitney and Kara, which she's, like, always trying to downplay. Like, you know, she, when Kara comes in and pretends to be a home buyer and says all this stuff, like, I can have a million parties here and I'll just put a fence around everything. And she's kind of parroting what she thinks rich people would say. And, you know, Whitney makes a comment like, oh, I couldn't afford one of these homes either, when she, like, literally, like, lives in one of these homes. This is a scene that really, like, highlights that Kara is also working in the massage parlor right now because she, you know, has to,
well, she didn't make the sale,
like,
right?
She
didn't make the sale last episode. Like, the guy didn't buy any art. Yeah. The thing I think is that I can be guilty of this. I don't give $350 tips on my massages, but I am someone who has become very accustomed to, I'm willing to pay for convenience. I very much am, like, someone who's like, okay, I'll do it. So, like, I go to sometimes pro wrestling shows that are independently run. And if you don't buy, like, basically a VIP ticket, you might have to stand. And I'm like, no, I'm absolutely going to, I'll spend an extra, like, $25 to make sure I get to sit down. So that's me. But I feel like in this scene, Whitney is, like, the most extreme example of being able to use money to, you know, who is she trying to make not uncomfortable? Kara said she would do it, and she's already going to pay for the thing. And yet Kara, like, wouldn't have got a tip for the thing, but her tip was never going to be $350. But Whitney is just hoping that, like, if I just give so much money, that will make me feel less bad when I walk out.
She's just trying to absolve herself from, like, the guilt that she is experiencing, because, like, she is in a higher social class than Kara is, than Fernando is, than, like, all of the, like, she's a landlord. She's displacing people. She's trying to enrich herself with this development, with this television show. She's in a higher social position than Phoebe, than the cameraman, than, like, all of these people. And she's trying to put all of these little band-aids over everything while she's, like, actively changing the social fabric of the place because she has the money to do that. So it's, like, very misguided from Whitney. It's entirely to make herself more comfortable with what she's doing. But it's this extremely misguided notion that you can basically, like, take somebody's home, you can ruin their community, you can, like, you know, jeopardize their livelihoods. But if you give them a nice tip, then you're still, like, a great, generous person.
Yeah. I wonder, just, like, slightly, it feels like there's maybe not enough time, because it kind of came up last episode, which is, how much have you spent on jeans? It was $14,000. And maybe they're just so rich that it, like, how much does she get from her dad? Isn't it like 40 grand?
Yeah, I think it's a 40 or 50 grand.
Because it was going to be 30, and he's like, oh, I just gave you 40 or 50, whatever, because I won't have to do it again. But then they got in this fight. And I am wondering if in the finale, the Siegel's finances will be one of the things that, like, comes home to roost.
Yeah. She's oh, the seagulls. The seagulls.
Yeah, that's come right. Home. That's right. Yeah, they'll just be like cawing for bread. That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Whitney's working out on the rowing machine. Asher, great joke. He comes in and says, row, row, row your boat. It's great. And she says, what is it? And the language in the contract has been changed, that a participant may be portrayed in a false light. And he thinks you'd only add that if you're worried, like, you were doing that and that you might get a libel claim.
The parties acknowledge that the performer may be exposed to ridicule, humiliation, or condemnation and may therefore be portrayed in a false light. That's not a contract I would want to sign, Grace.
You didn't have to sign. Wait, what? You didn't have to sign that for Pocho Rios for all the podcasting? I don't edit the pods. I don't know who's
Josh makes everyone sign that contract.
Oh, man. I can't sue him for libel. Oh, man. This is very funny. And then he asks, like, have you seen any new cuts of the show? And she's like, maybe we just go watch it. And says, okay, can I have a kiss? No, but I did talk about our relationship pretty honestly in the cuts, so we should go watch it.
Yeah.
Brutal. Oof. Brutal. They go to the hotel, and everyone, Asher is in a great mood. He does not know what's coming. He's jumping on the bed. Mm-hmm. He was just, you know, he's come on, Whit, like, let's get in the bed. Dougie says, you know, it's a work in progress, but, you know, we play up the tension, but in a fun way. It's still very clear you love each other, and they start watching mm-hmm. the footage.
I like how he says, and the dinosaur thing is gonna go.
Yeah. So we get the setup. It's about their homes. It's about passive energy, passive homes, but then also about their relationship. This is the worst joke of, like, yeah, it's you know, there's this home on Palmer. She's like, everyone loves a Palmer. And she's like, wait, what? He's like the drink.
Like an Arnold Palmer, iced tea and lemonade.
It's so funny. There's a line about Asher's been taking comedy class, and he says, that makes it seem like I'm not funny. And so they stop in to see Freckle, the sort of lead contractor, constructor, at Pasta Vista, and then this is where James Toledo is going to arrive, and they'll do sort of a land acknowledgement.
Yeah, they acknowledge the occupied and unceded land, and then James says, thanks for your continued support in our fight with local, state, and federal governments over our rights regarding our roads and easements in our communities. We're sick and tired of dealing with the government's trespassing on our lands. And then we find out from Dougie, the network wants to shorten that section and soften the language. And Asher says, like, no, it's important to keep it. And he holds Whitney's hand as sort of this acknowledgement, like, look, I'm doing the right thing. And then in the cut, I love this part.
This is Grace. Great.
Whitney says, the battle he speaks of is less a literal battle and more of a clerical concern over the compensation for road use in areas that don't affect access to our properties or anything related to the titles of this land, even though we do recognize ourselves as having obtained this land through a long history of colonization. And then Asher just says, that's right.
That's right. Yeah, it's more of a clerical battle.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, what needs softening here? It's perfectly softened.
And what, like, and Whitney here, it's like, it's just so flimsy, her defense and her solidarity with the indigenous people, to be like, oh, yes, we acknowledge, like, the history of colonization and that these are occupied and unceded lands. But as long as, like, we also recognize that this has nothing to do with, like, the titles of our property and access to our property. And, like, she's totally trying to have her cake and eat it too, while, like, saying, like, oh, we're good and all of this is bad, but none of this has anything to do with us.
The simultaneous, like, having memorized the very long land acknowledgement and the cuts of just the staff who do not look interested at all. I don't know if you're familiar with Baroness von Sketch Show. This is a Canadian sketch comedy show for women. It's very funny. Oh. If you work in an office, especially if you're a woman who works in an office, some of that stuff is, like, so on the nose. But there's a sketch where they go to a play. At the beginning, they give a land, and I'm for land acknowledgments, but also at the beginning of the play, they give it, and then this woman goes, "Oh, we should leave." And they go, no. He goes, well, like, wait, but what? Like, should we, but it's, you know, we're saying
it's not our land. But yeah.
So we leave. And like, yeah, well, the theater's been here for like 50 years. So, yeah. Anyway, Baroness von Sketch Show, very good. So this is where Whitney seems pretty sad. Asher's checking in. And Whitney says, we should watch the pottery. section. Mm-hmm. We skipped to it, actually. And Dougie says, oh, that's all gone. And she says, I think it's important for Asher to see it. And so they show it. And this is where it's a lot more than what they showed before, which is there is the thing about him holding the phone like it's a sermon. That's what leads it off. But basically, she goes on this long tirade about someone who worships her and who would not want this. It sounds like a dream. But also, you know, if you left them, they'd be destroyed. You hold all the power. And what would like life be like without her in the picture? This is pretty sad. This is pretty sad.
It's
someone
really,
you love, you yeah. loves you so much that the real version of you ceases to exist. You'll never be fully satisfied with them. What do you do? There's so much more to her than people know. I'm complicated, passionate, and full of contradictions. I'm not perfect, but does that mean I don't deserve happiness?
My God, Whitney. And this is like, and the parts, and this cuts to Whitney at the art party,
yeah.
you know, with like Kara's fed lines and all of that, like so contrived. Like these are not Whitney's friends. This is not Whitney's like real life of passion and whatever. Yeah, it's cut between Whitney complaining about her marriage with Asher and Asher talking about how everything she does is so pure and true. And I feel lucky to stand in her shadow. It's like extremely raw. And at the end, like Whitney is kind of like braced watching this whole thing. Like this is going to be like the blow that destroys Asher.
The thing I think is interesting is that like, I think this is like, you know, it's fair. These are fair feelings for Whitney to have. We just also know that Whitney is pretty terrible herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the actual idea of like being with somebody who is not in love with the actual version of you, is in love with like all the things that come with being with you and the things that they get out of that relationship is an interesting thought, just all wrapped up in Whitney has a pretty distorted view. I mean, so many of the camera angles of the show are like distortions. She's mm-hmm. a pretty distorted version of who she is as a person. And so it's almost like hypocritical for her to be like, he doesn't see
she doesn't see her real self either.
No. So it's like, I think that that's where I think this is, it's because I, you know, the genuine idea of like being with somebody and that person not being right for you is a completely relatable, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And the idea that like, oh, you actually like, you don't actually see in me who I think I am, whatever, but it's all wrapped up in like, she's wants to be on television.
Yeah.
You know? Showing that she's like fixing things when she's actively breaking things. She has no tool.
Right. She has no tool. And it's almost like this kind of like house of cards came crumbling down, like not because she was like it seems like once she felt like the relationship, like Asher was more of a liability than an asset in terms of furthering her goals. That's when her dissatisfaction with the marriage started. Like once the focus group he tested negative in the focus group. And like once Dougie got in her head, like we actually need to use this angle that your relationship with Asher is falling apart. Like that felt like so much more of the impetus for her dissatisfaction than anything that came up in their relationship.
And the balance between them early on is like, oh, I don't really do the paperwork. Asher does the paperwork, right? And there's all these things that he does that he goes and buys some of the homes, right?
Yeah.
Like, got paid a little, you know, but there is this, like, he does, I feel bad calling it utility, but in their, like, business partner relationship. And the moment where the sweater gets stuck shows that they also have genuine, mm-hmm. like, you know, fun and they enjoy being in each other's company until Whitney wants to turn it into content.
Even the weird cherry tomato scene was like some kind of chemistry. I mean, obviously it wasn't perfect. And I think that like you could say that all of Whitney's relationships are really utilitarian. Like, does she have a genuine friendship with Kara or with anybody else? Like, but I think it's, you know, she really kind of gets wrapped up in this, like, our marriage is over once it's implanted from, you know, the focus groups and from Dougie's note there. So I think that there is something true, but she's really not confronting or being honest with herself about this either.
Yeah. And I think the piece you said earlier about her being the main character, I think she's, I don't want to say Asher's not at fault. And I was going to say Whitney's the most at fault, but she does seem to be at least one of the people on the show who is the most willing to sacrifice anything. That, you know, she's the one who's like, fire Fernando, like get rid of him. Like all of these ways, and like not sell the house to that, you know, like that person threw out the, you know, the induction stove out. They don't deserve to live here. She's the most willing to sacrifice anything in the vein of what she thinks. Does she think it's the right thing? Like the right thing also comes with her getting attention for the right thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So who is like the avatar though for like Nathan Fielder? Is it Asher? Is it Dougie? Is it Whitney? Is it like some conglomeration of the three of them?
Yeah. I mean, the Whitney thing is interesting in terms of Asher actually seeing him as the, and, you know, is this one of those things where it's like, you know, it was all Nathan Fielder all along. It's like the Nathan Fielder is the Seagulls, you know, because he's both like the one, like in the rehearsal, basically, you know, kind of spoiling the thing. We presume you've watched the rehearsal of your 9 episodes into this, and maybe not, you'll go watch it. But that last episode is so much about like, oh my God, what did I do? You know, of that show in a way that, imagine he didn't do that is kind of like who Whitney is, of like, imagine you did all that stuff and you never acknowledge. But the interesting
and maybe
thing
that's
is,
what the last episode is going to be like, because like, yeah, I think Whitney is like a little bit more like, if you think about like, I mean, Asher is portrayed by Nathan Fielder and definitely has the most superficial similarities to him, you know, micro penis notwithstanding. I can't speak to that particular point, but maybe
I said it was prosthetic, but I don't know.
But the creative drivers of the philanthropy / Green Queen are Dougie and Whitney. Right. And Nathan Fielder as like a creator would probably be more akin to what their roles are in creating the HGTV show. So I think that that's interesting. And like, what does it mean? Like, I don't know, like what does this mean in a relationship is interesting in a marriage. Like obviously there's themes about marriage and family in the rehearsal quite heavily. So like how much of that is an issue that Nathan Fielder is trying to explore in his art?
The other thing with the rehearsal that's so interesting is that the beginning seems like it's going to be something. And then it's like, there's this thing that absolutely catches fire that every, like, I wonder if like, you know, you got the notes from HBO about what that show is going to be. And you look at the end product and you're like, wait, I thought it was going to be this thing where like each episode you would do that thing you did in episode one. It's like, yeah, but this stuff is all of this stuff is way better. Like the storyline that happens was basically pretending to raise a child. It, all of that other stuff gets like tossed away in the, in the essence of like this thing that he is so fascinated by. And, but then arguably finds the perfect, like, I don't call the lady who's in that show a victim, but you know, to a degree,
the perfect mark at least.
And the kid, but anyway, this show.
What I
love about this episode, what this, like the format of this is, like all of this is pretty, like this episode, it's not traditional TV, but you kind of get like, there's a typical pattern to this, right? Of like, you're seeing the ways in which like, this is the rug is going to get pulled out from Asher. You'll feel really bad for Asher. Then he knocks back on the hotel door and he comes back inside, Amanda. And he gives this wild speech.
He applauds.
Like, he does applaud. And then he says, like, I've been feeling this too. It all makes sense. I am the curse. I have not been enough. I'm on my phone too much. He chucks his phone. I sold the house to Mark. I let my shortcomings get in the way of all the sacrifices that we need to make in order for this to work. I didn't give Nella the money. I'm a liar. I'm a terrible person. I'm the problem, but I'm going to fix it. I'm going to be different so that people can see how amazing you are. And what I think is so fascinating about this is he's doing, I've said this already, but he's doing more of what she is complaining about him doing in the conversation where he's trying to fix being broken up with, basically.
Yeah. He says, he starts, we will make this work. And he says, I will make this work. You know, it's like he's and again, it's like this reminded me of the scene where she first tells him that she's pregnant and he starts to like project what he thinks that she's thinking when she's clearly not. And he's like saying, like, you know, it's like you always say, we're so good on paper. Paper covers rock. The world needs Whitney Siegel. And he's like, that's a good girl. Like, it's
the world will know Whitney Siegel, I think is the last thing he says, which is what Phoebe said earlier. Then she went and Googled herself and was like, I don't, you know, is this me? This scene is so, it's so uncomfortable. It's the most
Whitney, like Emma Stone's face as Whitney in this scene is so hard to take. Like, she does such an excellent job of like that kind of like being trapped in an eternal scream. It's like she's not making any noise.
No.
She's her face is almost motionless, but the tension is palpable. She's like was looking for this freedom. Like, she thought she'd show Asher this and he'd leave and she'd be free of this relationship, maybe even at the expense of the television show. Like, at one point when he comes in and she's on the rowing machine, she's like, well, don't sign it. Maybe we don't do the show.
Yeah. I mean, she knows, like, basically that's what Dougie tells her at the beginning. Like, if you go down this avenue, they don't want that. They don't want that. They won't keep it going. So yeah, she is like, and what I really love about that too, is he's not like, you know, he's just acting the way he is, but she tried to tell him without actually having to tell him. So it's perfect. Like, narcissist Whitney to be like, just watch the video. Like, I think you need to watch the video. And then when he does not get the message and only entrenches himself further, I think also the fear on her face is also like, oh my God, like, I'm now going to have to actually tell, like, I have to tell, I'm going to have to vocalize this of like, no, I still think I feel a lot of those things. And you're just being more of what I'm complaining about on the television. So I think it's like, it's such a fun way for it to like, for their problems to fully come to a head.
There's no earnest communication between them. Like, with her, it's all mocking and stonewalling. And like, you know, there's a whole thing where you hear him with the therapy speak saying like, I said the thing that, you know, our therapist told us to say. It's like, she is not engaging in any kind of open and honest dialogue with him. But this felt like horror. And like, Dougie is sitting in the room and he sort of knows that he's kind of like stirred this shit up. Like, he's been a little bit of an instigator here. He's super uncomfortable.
No, he has a great response. It's the classic Whitney go-to whenever somebody says something that you don't, she says, oh, that was beautiful.
That was beautiful. Really beautiful.
Yeah. And that's where we leave it.
Yeah. Yeah. What three miserable people, Grace.
I kind of think, we talked last week again about like, okay, how's the show end? I almost feel like we are just going to go into next episode and they'll all just pretend like it's fine. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They're all in the exact same situation, basically, except like they know it for real, but then won't actually still admit it. And so they'll just be together and do the show, and it'll be like the phony fake version of the show. But that's what they'll do, because they'll make money off the show and sell the homes and be rich.
Yeah. I mean, even Dougie is like, Dougie, I think, is like the most invested in the show that he has been, because like, he realizes, okay, HGTV really is going to pick this up and he doesn't want to screw it up. So they're kind of all stuck together. I can't wait to see how this ends. Like I said, like, tonally, I think that, I mean, I'm not expecting it, but I feel like I need a little bit of a release in terms of the humor being a little bit more forefronted after having such a tough few episodes to watch. But really, really fascinating and very well done.
The other ending I could totally see from Whitney is that she leaves. She just goes. And there's this like version of her that she's like, I'm free. And then behind her is just like the mess that is left.
Yeah.
Of like,
she Asher just goes and works for her parents.
Something. Yeah. And it's just like, even that, I think she thinks that she's too good of a person, where she just like moves to New York and tries to just like live in New York and just leave. And like, the easiest way to not clean up the mess is to not clean up the mess. just go. But yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, there has to be like, I imagine we're definitely going to get some Nala and Abshir in the last episode to kind of close the loop on that. gosh, I'm like hoping we don't see like a really tough, tragic ending for that family. That would be hard.
Yeah, I do feel like the show did a pretty good of potentially like addressing the curse. I know the whole show is the curse, so whether we need like one more note on that. But I do kind of like the fact that Asher thinks that he is the curse. I do quite like that as like that theme. Is there any other loose ends that we haven't really picked up on in a while? It feels like the TV interview, like the report came out on the news. Asher does reveal that he did leak the ad. So potentially the casino, like if they come after him in some way, if he signed like any sort of NDA, like, you know, potentially what he did is illegal. I don't know whether that's like fun finale.
Yeah. I mean, no. I do feel like a lot of the threads that they put out there have at least like been, I mean, Fernando, I think we probably got an ending for him. You mentioned the Monica's news story. Like, I think that that's probably resolved. I wonder if there was anything more, like, I was sort of expecting when Bill showed back up that something about Whitney's pregnancy might come up, because we know that Asher had mentioned that. That's right. So that's another theme. Like, I don't think that that needs to come through again.
The one we've never picked back up is Dougie buying alcohol for teens.
Right. I was wondering if Dougie and his alcohol problems was going to come back up again.
Yeah. I think the pregnancy was such a big part of, I think, episode two, that I certainly could see. I think I agree. I think most of the stuff that they introduced, they have wrapped up nicely. Yeah. The biggest one certainly is like Abshir, Nala. And yeah. So yeah. Any final notes? That's the penultimate. Only one more.
I'm so glad that we've watched this together, Grace. Like, I'm getting like so much feedback in the world that people like do not like this show. And I've heard a lot of like, well, I'm watching it because it's Nathan Fielder, but I really don't like it. And I do think that having the opportunity to really take time and like watch it very closely and explore the themes has made it a richer experience for me.
We were talking on the countdown pod, or maybe the preview pod, that my letterbox, like, it shows me highest rated category. It gets like weirdly specific, but mine is like tragically sad is the thing that I love the most. So I don't think it's a complete surprise that I'm like sitting watching the show each week being like, it's so good. And a lot of people are like, I don't like it. why would I sit in this for an hour? But I've quite enjoyed it. So, all right. Well, we'll be back next week with the finale. Until then, Dr. Amanda, what else you got going on?
Grace, you and I have recently announced that we will be covering True Detective, which is airing on HBO on Sunday night, starting on January. What's the date?
14th, January 14th.
So we'll be showing
right
up
into it, basically. Yeah,
right. That's after the episodes air.
That's the finale of the. That's like, because the episodes come out on the Friday, but they air on Showtime on the for the curse. So basically, the same.
So you can just keep your Grace and Amanda slot like fully plugged in. Ride it out to True Detective. We will be detecting truly, which is our tagline.
We'll be detectiving truly. Is actually
very excited about that. And then Ariel and I are back covering 6 Feet Under season 2. That podcast will we took a break for the holidays, but we're going to be back next week continuing our episodic coverage of 6 Feet Under, which has been great and continues to be great in season 2. But you can keep up with everything that I'm doing by following me on Twitter, where I am Dr. Amanda R. How about you, Grace?
I had many aspirations to watch 6 Feet Under. I did watch the premiere, and then Jess and I picked like multiple seasons in a row for full spoiler recaps, where there are multiple seasons of the show. So we're just like, this next week we're watching season 2 of Julia, which means I also had to watch season 1 of Julia. Wow. And we just did that for like 4 weeks in a row. So at some point I will watch it and listen to you, but
that would be, I would love to hear what you think of it. Like, I've been having a really great time revisiting it.
Yeah. On the countdown pod too, I like to make sure I've seen everything. So it's like binging beef,
on
my holiday break.
Yeah.
So things will calm down. Yeah, we're going to cover True Detective. We did wrap up our coverage of The Crown, Shannon, Gus, and I. So check that out. I thought the finale was excellent. Aaron and I talk about movies each week. We talked about Ferrari. We did our top 10 movies of 2023 countdown, as well as like some stuff we missed. So check that out. And then Mike Bloom, LaTanya, and I talking Fargo each week, which has been so excellent. Such a good season of TV. One of the most impactful shows I've watched in a long time. It's so good. So we'll be back next week with the season finale, maybe the series finale.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine another season of this craze?
I think you and I would be like amazing. And yeah, people like, yeah. Oh, no thanks. I don't know. Wait, did we do a lot of shows like Paul T. Goldman? Can you imagine another season of Paul T.
Goldman? Oh my goodness.
I don't know if those are like, yeah.
That was a gem. That's a forgotten gem.
Got some votes in the top 10. Nice. Not many. And I think one of them was yours, but that's okay.
Nice.
All right, we'll be back next week with the season finale of The Curse. Until then, bye-bye.